Today's episode of Tech Talks on the Unsettled Media Podcast Network is brought to you by Tech Impact, focused on unlocking prosperity by embracing technology. For more, head to techimpact.it.
Welcome back to Tech Talks with Kathy Simpson, or if this is your first episode, welcome to Tech Talks. I hope you're having a fabulous day, learning, living, and enjoying life. I can't believe it, but we're at episode 19, and what a gem I have in store for you today. It's really a masterclass on what's important in a business partnership when buying a company and being focused on driving growth with a partner. My guests, Roxanne Fairweather and Dave Grebenz, are names we all know and admire here in New Brunswick for their work in the technology sector, but also their community work too. What you're going to enjoy about this next hour is that they are full of energy, and it's so obvious that they are partners who care deeply for each other professionally and personally. They darn near finish each other's sentences. They are leaders who had a vision for a company, Innovatia, and they've been co-CEOs driving growth for over a decade now, 12 years actually. In this episode, you're going to learn all about their personal and business philosophy, about their company that has been on a growth curve for a long time with offices in New Brunswick, India, and people in Calgary, Houston, Nova Scotia, and more. They are the largest tech company that has been started and grown out of Atlantic Canada, and it's based here in St. John. Verafin is going to change that stat now, but they are a very large company. Co-CEOs is a unique approach, and building subsidiary companies and spinning them out shows you the depth of the business talent and experience they possess. Dave and Roxanne are salt of the earth people that I've known for over 25 years, and I continue to be inspired and learn from them all the time. If you've got an idea you're trying to work through or a problem that you need to solve, they are a phone call away. Let's learn more by diving right into this episode. Welcome, everybody, to Tech Talks with Kathy Simpson. We have two fabulous guests that I've known for many, many years. So it's just an absolute pleasure to have them today. Roxanne Fairweather, start with you. Tell us a little bit about what you studied in college or university or over the years since you've been working. Yeah. And tell us, what did you think you were going to do with your career?
Okay, well, first of all, I have 14 grandchildren. And they are the center of my life. So I went back to school as a single parent, and I got my degree at the University of Toronto. My undergraduate, I focused on public administration, and my desire was to be a lawyer. And I think this is just indicative of keeping yourself open to the universe. Because when I received my degree, I was in Toronto, as I said, and, my dad wasn't doing well. So I came back to St. John with my three children. And I was fortunate enough to get a job at then the New Brunswick Telephone Company and to go into their management training program. Because I had just graduated. I was older than most of the trainees at the time, and had a little bit of different life experience. But when I graduated, which was older, I was in my early 30s. My desire was very different than maybe mainstream. It was more, to take care of my family and to ensure that my children had an education. I grew up on the east side of St. John, so I came back to St. John, and a neighborhood that was taken down for urban renewal. And I knew that the way out of poverty is through education, so I was really focused on making sure that my children had a university degree. And I was just, again, blessed with tremendous mentors at the New Brunswick Telephone Company that I guess saw something in me and coached and mentored that and championed that. So I will be ever grateful for those wonderful folks that took me under their wing and coached me along my career.
Well, I think you took it and you paid it forward. I know many examples where you've done the same thing. So that's an outstanding contribution from everybody. Dave, tell us a little bit about your days at UMB. And what did you think you were going to do with your career?
Well, I can't tell you about all the things I did at UMB to start with. But I did go to UMB. I picked up a bachelor's in business and a major in economics. And graduated, I guess, in 86. And, 86 was not a great time to find a job. My big goal after university was I was going to go travel through Europe. And friends I was going to do that with didn't have any money. And then I figured out I didn't have any money either. So I actually ended up going to Newfoundland. I did go overseas, but I stopped at Newfoundland. And so when I came home, I was kind of desperate for a job. And I found a job at the telephone company as a janitor. So that was my first job. And then I just stuck with it. I really thought I'd probably, I get moved into the management trainee program at some point in the process. And I really thought I was only going to stay at NBTEL for 5 years at the max. And I ended up staying there for 20 years. And it was probably the best MBA I ever got that you could ever get. Really.
So why don't you keep on that path? And Roxanne, you can add once Dave gives us his answer. What was so inspiring about NBTEL that kept people there for so long and have a passion for not only that company, but the management and the leaders there? And so many have stayed here in New Brunswick as a result. What was it about it?
I think there were a few things. They saw the possibilities. They were always innovating and innovating from the customer perspective. So looking at what the customer issues or pain points were and innovating, they were always first to market. They won a lot of innovation awards across the world. We had people coming into St. John, into our living lab that was coined by Jerry Pond. And Jerry is a mentor to both Dave and I. We had world leaders coming into NBTEL to look at how we were innovating in the telephony business, and not only were we innovating, we had, the best cost per client. We had the best client satisfaction. We had a great, thriving, growth perspective for employees, to grow their career, to grow personally. It was a place that did not tolerate, disrespect in any way. So, Dave and I, when I know you're going to get to this, but, one of the things that glues us together really is, our absolute, commitment to diversity in people and respect for people, regardless of race, color, creed, gender, no bias at all. You know, it's all about growing the person, growing their skills, growing their potential, and enabling that to grow the potential of the company. And that was what was so exciting. I mean, my mother knew what was going on at Invitel. And she was so proud, not just because I was there. I mean, she did do take all the clippings, but she was proud of what Invitel was doing for our province.
Mm-hmm. And Dave, you had some pretty amazing mentors, as Roxanne talked about, people like Jerry, the late Jack Travis, Bob Neal. There's so many. Could you have imagined that would have been what 20 years was going to look like for your career?
Well, you mentioned Jack Travis. He was salt of the earth, a person that really knew people, and he had a dramatic effect on me personally in terms of getting me engaged there. And as along with all of the others that you mentioned, but it, you know, and there's all the stuff that Roxanne talked about, innovation, the company, but really, you know, they just made you feel like you mattered and gave you tons of autonomy to do things that, I'll tell you, a 20 some year old fella that thought he knew everything but really didn't know anything. They let us do things that you couldn't imagine. Gave us, you know, they carved up like little pieces of the business and told you to run it. And I think Dan Dwaran, I think, coined it intrapreneur. Mm-hmm. Very best. It really, and when I say it, it was a real life MBA. No glitter, no nothing. It was just good, solid business sense. And number of times I certainly made a lot of mistakes, but you know, I think Jerry would say the mistakes were part of the learning process, and they helped you out with your mistakes, but you know, held you accountable at the same time. that's for sure. And you know what, Kathy, you're a product of it as well. So, that's what kept me in it and engaged for quite a while.
I remember, I don't know if you guys can remember, but I had the telephone portfolio for a little while, and we went and bought about $750,000 worth of Vista 350s one time without fully following the process. There were some issues with the process. And I remember going up to the boardroom, and Jerry and Jack were both there. And I think there was a bunch of people from product management, and they made a point of helping me understand that you just can't make those kinds of mistakes. Those are kinds of mistakes that you need to talk about. But it was done in such a way to help you understand, and I'll never forget it. So we're very fortunate. And you had that opportunity, and then you decided to buy this company that had started there called Innovatia. So how did the two of you come together? You worked together at the same company, but how did you come together to make that life-altering decision?
I'm just going to go back to the experience at Invitel, because sure. I think that I don't know, Dave, about all the areas that you did work in, but I know that all of the experiences, I was in marketing, I was in engineering, I was in product management, I was in policy, I was in finance, I was in HR. They gave, like when you talk about an MBA and Jack talking about Jack Travis, we could spend 2 hours just talking about some of those experiences. But I remember he said, "Oh, you don't know what you're talking about. You could." There was we had a phone store, and it was down in the basement of the current building that we're currently housed in. And he said, "You go down there and you manage that store and you balance the register every day, and you talk to the clients every day, and you talk to the employees every day, and you talk to the installers every day, you figure out what's really, really important. And by the way, at the end of the day, you've got to have enough money to pay people's salary. And, you know, he said, because that's how this works. This is the only reason we're here, is to, you know, employ and grow. And, you know, I think that experience, you know, gave Dave and I such a breadth of expertise. You know, not that we're experts in everything, but we had that holistic view of how a business ran. And I'll just speak personally. You know, Dave was working at the, I was running Innovatia, and Dave was working at the telephone company and Alliant at that time. And I had been bugging him to come and work for Innovatia. I remember I was getting on a train going somewhere, and I said, "Buddy, I'm not calling you again. I need you here. Are you coming or not?" And
tenacity is Roxanne's one of her alert.
It probably wouldn't have been the last time. But you know, I think there's a couple of things, and the reason I'm making that point is that, you know, our partnership works. I wouldn't have done this with just anyone. It's too hard. You know, running a business, it's been great. It's exciting. Definitely glad that I did it personally. But you know, you've got to have somebody with you on your side that you can count on and that you know has the same values as you do. And so, you know, I think the really, really understanding the business, and you know, Dave definitely understood the business, but from a very different, we're very different people. We bring different talents to the table. We don't always see eye to eye. We don't always see the same perspective, but somehow magically, as we talk, we get there. We get to the same point. That's listening and having respect. And if you do not have that fundamental respect for each other, it just can't work. And, but anyway, I personally didn't want to do it alone. So had great faith in the people here, when we decided to purchase, Innovatia from, it was a management buyout from Bell Alliant. We had absolute confidence in the products that we were supporting for our clients. Dave maybe can tell you the story about how that all came about, because when we bought it, you know, we had one client and it was Nortel, and they were going into bankruptcy. So I'm going to stop there. That's the cliffhanger.
Yeah. So Dave, how did you turn that around? You're losing your biggest client, your only client, Northside.
Yeah, it's a difference when you see your largest and your versus your only. Yeah, 95% of our revenue was dependent on Nortel, and so you know, basically, you know, the number one job was to you know, figure out how the bankruptcy processes in Nortel was going to happen, and figure out how we could keep as much of that business as possible. Eventually, that business was sold to four other players, and we're very proud of the fact that we've actually been able to maintain some of that business to this day that got moved over to companies like Avaya, and grown it. So that was job one for sure. To introduce ourselves to the companies that were buying the various pieces of Nortel, and resell ourselves. And Bell actually, and our friends at Alliant at the time were helpful around that process, and we're thankful to them for doing that. Then the thing we started talking about is we need to diversify. Mm-hmm. Yes, we need to diversify in the ICT sector, but also we needed to diversify beyond the ICT sector. it's like any sector. If one client gets a cold, they all eventually get sniffles, and we move on from there. and so you know, we really had to look beyond, and we looked at various sectors and health, aerospace and defense, and energy, and all of those we thought about because they were here in our backyard, and we looked at them, and we eventually really landed on the energy space, and primarily the reason there was we thought we had something that we could work with the clients directly, whereas in health was usually had to be a, you know, you had to work behind another company that may have had a large project, especially in aerospace and defense. You would have to line yourself up with, you know, the Boeings and so forth of the world. And so that was, we learned in a previous business of ours that it's really, really important to have direct and contact with the clients. And so, you know, the energy space, we thought we could build a niche there. And we have, and in both the services that we provide that sector, and we eventually built a product in that space, a software product, and then we've since diversified into other sectors like finance and other companies, a variety of sectors actually. So it's that was basically. And Roxanne's probably tired of me hearing about this, you know, plan A, plan B, plan C. We always had a plan A, plan B, plan C. Sometimes we extended it beyond that. and so being nimble, you know, being able to adjust to what, you know, some people call it opportunistic, but I think it's more than being opportunistic. It's going after things, recognizing some things aren't going to work, and realizing what you're going to do when those things don't work. And so we've always had that approach.
Yeah, when we bought the business, just to put a point on some of this stuff, we had Nortel was at least 95% of the revenue, one client. We had 230 people. We were a services only business. And I don't know if this is where you were going with other questions, Kathy, but today we have probably half a dozen pieces of software. You know, we have spun out one company. We have a very solid, line of business with another piece of software that was developed that Dave was talking about. We have about 670 people. We were situated only in St. John, New Brunswick. We have a very large office in Bangalore, India, with about 250 people. We have offices in Calgary and Houston. But we have virtually people pretty much all over the planet. And kudos to our employees, really. Dave does this a lot better than I do, but it was definitely our belief that our people, in the products and how our people were delivering to our clients. When we started, we looked very, very different than where we are today. Very different.
We couldn't even get a bank.
We went to four banks and finally not the bank we're currently with, but we did. And when we went out, we kind of canvassed many of our mentors, and I would say that 80% of them dissuaded us from buying the business. I think at that point you've got to, and we had many conversations, and Dave did a ton of work on the plan A, plan B, plan C, and we kind of divided and conquered around some of the areas of expertise, but, you know, I spoke to, at that point, they had stalking horses for Nortel in terms of, you know, where they were selling their contracts into. And I got expert on every one of the stalking horses in every line of business to make sure that we, you know, that we had been building relationships depending on who was going to win the business so that we could convert our contracts over to that piece of business. So, I mean, we did a ton of work. And when we got all the feedback, when we did go out and canvass our mentors, when Dave and I kind of came back and said, okay, are we crazy? Like, you know, and we are, but that's beside the point. Keeps it fun. It was more that we really believed in what we were doing. We believed in and understood how what we were doing with the current contracts could be extended and how deeply embedded they were. And Lino Celeste, who is another mentor, used to say, you've got to be an octopus. You've got to wrap your arms around your client, all 8 or 12 of them. And, you know, you've got to be intimate with your clients and really understand what value you're bringing to them. You know, as Dave said, we had those various plans and we made sure that we were going to be successful, not only for ourselves. I mean, we took very seriously that these employees were going to be converting over from Bell Alliant to us. So it was a responsibility.
But 670 people, I would think that it's the biggest Atlantic formed and Atlantic based IT company. I don't know of a bigger one.
There's a small company called Verafin in Newfoundland that might be.
except for that one, but you've had that distinction for a long time.
Yes.
And, you know, I'd love to understand how do you, because I think the startup community will love this. How did you decide to build a product and spin it out to another company? Because it's something that MBTEL did. So you saw that happen and were part of that in many shapes and forms. So how did you start to see that as a business growth strategy for Innovatia? Maybe Dave, I'll start with you.
Yeah, listen, I think we've always had a passion for research and development here. Roxanne, you know, had always talked about, you know, had a vision to how do you take, you know, the service of business and make it more transactional I really don't think we knew what that really meant or how we were going to do it, but that was always the direction. We kind of lapped onto this concept of, you know, we're practitioners with some very large companies, like, you know, world-class companies, you know, the Ciscos and even Nortel in the day, Avaya and Shell. And I mean, we've got some great clients and they're leaders in their space, but they're, you know, knowledge management isn't their core. But we get to see what the voids are. And whether it be a methodology or practice that we could evolve or a piece of code or a software that we thought we could build to kind of fill a void. That's the emphasis of our research and development. And even when times were very tight, and when I say very tight, I mean very tight, we always funded our research and development as much as we could. And probably at times overfunded it, but it's paid off, you know, we took a very practical approach to what we were building and what we were creating based on the market. And, you know, people get tired of me hearing me say, well, what's the problem? What's the problem we're solving? And fall in love. You know, I think Kathy, you and I sat in a dinner table one day and there was a Coca-Cola. I think it was a guy from Coca-Cola. He was chief innovation officer or something like that. And he talked about falling in love with the problem, and that's what it's all about. And so, you know, and so, you know, we were in a couple of instances, we were able to build some software that really solved a problem. And that was that eventually created the, you know, the company Gimba and the product that they sell, Procedure Flow. That problem came out of our technical support operations, right? That came out of our operations. And then as we were out talking to customers, we found out that, hey, you know, you guys have the same problem we have. Well, you know, and we led from there. And we actually, you know, this is where practical innovation happens. We got some companies to pay us to do some stuff for them around in this space. And we poured all of that money and more back into creating the product.
I guess both products that are, you know, major products that we have from different perspectives, but for Gimba, Procedure Flow, that was listening also to our employees. So our employees were dealing with a significant issue with the client at the time, which was Nortel. And, you know, we won't get into the, you know, the whole machinations of how that came to be, except that it was really employees and a manager who felt the autonomy to start a Skunk Works to solve a problem that they had and that Nortel had, that the client had. And then, you know, they brought it forward and we listened to them. And so that was the genesis of one of the major products we have. And it was people feeling like they had the autonomy to solve that problem.
Sounds like good training from your Jack Travis days in that phone center, Roxanne, and creating that culture within your own organization. Takes a lot of work, a lot of faith on both parties, employees to have the courage and you to have the courage, don't you think?
Yeah. And around the industrial space, I mean, kind of a similar thing, but it was in the context of a customer. And when we started talking to that client, they didn't really know what we did. And we struggled, didn't really know what they did, but that process of okay, well, here's our problem, and that's what we got down to, and then we said, well, okay, we can solve that problem, and it was the years of research that we developed, you know,
put into it,
our expertise and put into it, that allowed us to respond to that problem and solve it, and now we have a leading class product called the Accelerator KMS that we are, you know, started off with Irving Oil, and now we're, you know, we're selling it to, you know, we've got the world's largest chemical company, top three of the 15 or three of the top 15 world chemical companies, five of the top 10 industrial or refining companies in North America. We got the world's largest agribusiness company, you know, so very diverse. We're into forestry now, you know, very diverse area. And that all started with a problem here locally, and that we figured out how to solve that we knew would have similar problems. Now, we were a little bit ahead of the curve on that one. and it took a long time to get it off the rails, but it's flying now. So there's a lot of lessons there.
Right. And, you know, going back to being open to the universe, we started down the path of software development and, you know, and knowledge management, single sourcing and component development and so on. And, you know, so we were ready. We were ready for the problem in a way. Because we brought that, you know, that concept of a solution into the client, and we purpose built for their problem, the solution, but it had the backing of years of, like, literally probably 5 years of research and development that we had been building for and have, and you know, we do have some other software products that are on the side. And you know, the other thing is, very major client that we purpose built for went through a little bit of a downturn, turned off all of their investments, and kept this one. They kept this one. They invested in this one. And so, you know, we knew, yeah, we were ahead of the curve a little bit, but we knew if this company, and they're very successful and they're very smart and they don't make investments where, you know, it's not wise to do, we knew we had something and we had to stick with it. And so.
Oh, that led to growth. So if you were to describe innovation today, you started out very technical services and support. How do you describe the company today?
Well, take a crack at it. and it's always how do you describe a company that's, you know, has basically four companies within it? But at the root of it, we're a knowledge management company. We basically either convert or create content information for our clients, make that information accessible. So at the end of the day, that they're either more productive or operate more safely or achieve their business goals. In the case of our technology companies, we enable their customers to use their products and services in a better way that is more consistent with their brand and their service objectives for their clients. And so, you know, that's what it's all about. It's all about, capturing, creating, and making sure information that might have otherwise been stagnant and not accessible, and turning that information into a strategic weapon for our clients so that they can achieve their business goals. That's what we do. And in each of the four companies that we have, they do that in different ways, but at the core of what, that's what they do.
So when you look ahead, Roxanne, when you look ahead, what do you see for growth for Innovatia? I mean, it's been outstanding to date. What do you see for the next 5 years even?
You know, and practically, I was going to say, Dave, when you were talking, it reminded me of one of Jerry's sayings, and it's doing the extraordinary with the ordinary, and it's pulling out, finding that chasm, finding that gap in what's going on or the pain point, and developing from there in small and large ways. But the practical side of that is, once you get a hold of some of these components and you're investing in software, it does take money. So you've got to make sure that you're balancing all sides of the business all the time. We do have services companies, and just this pandemic has shown us that, you know, there are pieces of business that will be under a lot of pressure, and pieces of the business that you can take advantage of the current situation to help your clients with. So I think our flexibility, and I think Dave spoke to that, to be able to understand what's going on in the market and to pivot at that point, that's going to enable us to survive, thrive, and grow. That's really important, and we will continue to do that. I think there's huge opportunity, as Dave was talking about, the amount of information that we have to deal with today is overwhelming. It's overwhelming to people. And so, I think our genius is in simplifying that, in enabling people to get to the right piece of information that they need to get their job done. And again, creating the extraordinary with the ordinary. And there are so many opportunities to explore and to grow. And so, you know, it's like a curve, and an infinity circle or whatever. But you've got to continue to grow your business, to protect your business, and to keep looking at what Dave calls the next campfires. So what are the next campfires that we want to invest in and push forward in and develop in. And it's always shifting. There's all, you know, because clients are always looking for the edge to be competitive, and we have to help them. And that means that our employees have to grow with that infinity curve too. And so that's a challenge. And I think that as this global economy comes out of the pandemic, I think there's going to be tremendous opportunities, and you just have to be looking for them and pivoting.
And ready to go. So I want to get you guys talking about your leadership style. Not a lot of companies have co-CEOs. So I really want to explore, how did that come about? And what have been some of the positives that have come because you're both leading the organization? Who wants to go first?
We agreed very early on that this would be a 50-50 deal. And so it's win-win. We can't, there's nobody that has any more leverage. I don't think that's the way either one of us operate anyway, but we're both all in. We're both all in. And I'll just speak personally. I think it's wonderful to have a partner. I don't know how Dave feels about it. we are a very different people, except we have this incredible glue that is really around our values, our integrity, and how we feel about people. I think we have both very practical business inclinations, and that probably comes from MBTEL and our roots. And we also have very strong drive for innovation and change. So when you get, you know, when you get that combination, and you have to trust the person that you're working with, you have to know that no matter how angry or ticked off you might be at a particular point, that person always has your back. And, I have never doubted that for one minute in the 12 years that we've, before that, but and that's why I made that statement on getting on the train, but also for the 12 years that we've been, partnering in this business more from an ownership point of view. So that's what I would say.
How about you, Dave? I love that answer, Roxanne.
Yeah, I mean, listen, partnering's easy when things are going well. Partnering's tough when things aren't going well. And, but at the same time, when things aren't going well, a partner is a great thing to have, because you can talk about things that otherwise would just kill you inside. And I have that relationship with Roxanne. We can talk about things. There's really nothing off limits. And I'll be honest, it's not all business. It's very personal stuff. In the first year of our partnership, we both lost our mothers. That was very, very hard on both of us. I was diagnosed with Parkinson's. So that was a pretty crappy thing to have your business partner pop up 6 months after you create. Oh, by the way, I have Parkinson's. So, we've run out of money a few times. we've had clients call us up and say, sorry. We answer the call, and we answer the call in life and in work with very much the same approach. And it is an overriding approach of optimism that we both have. Great deal of integrity. Can't think of anybody who has more tenacity in terms of, we're going to work this through. Don't worry, Dave. That's what Roxanne always goes at, how she always goes at things. And, it's a very complex thing. It was funny. At one time, we were talking to some financial folks, and they said, "Well, I don't know. don't know if I'd want to put money into that because of you guys, more or less, being partners, two of you. And we, what the hell is that about? You know, and they kind of sent us this book called The Founder's Dilemma. A lot of it, you know, it's like marriage. The success rate probably isn't that great in partnerships. But Roxanne, I'd say, you know, she thought about it a lot more than I did at the beginning, which thankfully she did, in terms of what are the attributes of one another and how we fit. And that is something, getting into a partnership, a business partnership, is as much thought as you'd want to put into getting into a marriage, in my mind. And the fact that you got 600 children to and that's what it's about. You got to, and you have to approach
650 things. Yeah, Dave, just in case you weren't looking under the covers.
Yeah. So yeah, geez, we've been busy. But it's about, you got to leave your ego at the door. And you got to have discussions that get you to the right place. And I think we do that. And when we do get frazzled and so forth, we also have a CFO that we rely on that, you know, he puts on the referee shirt and you need to put some, and I don't know if we did that on purpose or not, but it just, we at times said, hey, geez, John, get in here. You know, someone else who we trust and has, you know, John DeGroyer, who has common values and it puts us on the right space. And again, it's all about making sure, you know, whether we were into details about how our partnership agreement would work to how we deal with a particular business challenge or problem, we always put the business first. And that's, we, you know, getting to the right answer is the big thing. The big thing I think that we're really good at.
And I guess I would also say that we have a huge amount of care for each other. I think that, you know, it's our employees, each other. And where we are, because we aren't always at the same level all the time. And I don't know whether it's just worked out or it's God's plan, but, you know, when somebody's down, the other one seems to be able to kind of bring up most of the time, you know, I'd say the, you know, vast majority of the time. So, if you can make it work, I think it's a wonderful, wonderful structure.
So you're both very diverse people. You'd only need to listen to this interview to see that. Diversity and inclusion, I know, is important to both of you. Tell me about how you're demonstrating that within your organization. Just the fact that your co-CEOs demonstrates it from the top. I mean, you know that. It's so evident. But how are you embracing the importance of diversity and inclusion in creating a culture for everyone to thrive at Innovatia?
Yeah. Well, listen, 50% of our leadership team is male, female. When you look at the leadership across the, you know, the four groups and the support groups that we have supporting them, and that works its way through the organization. And, And I can't say enough about the importance of immigration in terms of having a multicultural organization. It's the practicalities of it in terms of having the available workforce is one thing. But we are a global company. we need to be representative of our client base. So I think I'm sure there's studies on it. Sorry, there's a phone ringing in the background here. I'm sure there's studies on it, but I'll tell you that I absolutely believe that with diversity in the room, you have better decisions. And because people tend to look at things differently, not just because they're male or female, but there's that is one element of it. And, and I just think we make better decisions. And and plus I have, in my family, I grew up with three boys, three girls, and the girls used to kick my ass around quite regularly. So, so there you go. It's all part of life.
That's a great perspective to bring. And I love hearing that from you, Dave. I've known you a long time and I know you're passionate about it. Roxanne, I know how important this is to you, not only in Innovatia, but we're going to talk about one of your personal passions here in just a moment. How are you helping to contribute? How do you make that so important? Have you made that so important to you in your life?
It's just very, it's a part of me. It's part of my DNA. And we are very different. I have five brothers. I was the oldest, so I'm always the boss. that comes out once in a while.
We know where the tenacity comes from. That's for sure.
Survival. But the also I have strong faith and spirituality. You know, I feel that, you know, it's really important. That aspect of my life is incredibly important. It's probably the most important aspect of my life is my spirituality. I'm just striving to be better. In that, I mean, it is absolutely that everybody on this planet is made with worth. And seeing that worth in everyone and bringing that forward. We have very much diversity in gender right across the board, whether it's transgender or male, female, and different ethnicities, different religions. And I think if you're open, it happens. And we did, not that you do it for the award, but, you know, we did have a recognition for that in the St. John community for ensuring that we do have diversity in our workforce. And we both love our India office. It's so, you know, it's so full of life and youth and ambition and just seeing that and supporting it from a creative perspective is a gift for us, really, for the two of us. I just believe that if your spirit is open, then you will absolutely attract from the universe what you believe is good.
Well, it shows, Roxanne, in everything that you do. And I do want to finish up on, we know how important your work lives are. And they're certainly deep in your soul. You bring all of yourself to work. But I know you both have other passions that I would just like to give you an opportunity to talk about. Roxanne, you've been involved in literacy. You've been involved in poverty. You've been involved in Women for 50%. You can't live in the province and not know that these are causes that you champion. You don't just support, you champion. So how do you find the energy and the passion to make these a part of what you do every single day?
The energy just comes with it. I mean, if you love something, the energy comes. I had Winterfest with my grandchildren and I was out sliding with them. Like, the energy comes from the love. And
one of the questions is, how do you stop her?
If you love what you do and you know it's right, then you find the energy and the time. It just happens. And so, you know, much like you, Kathy, I mean, and Dave, I mean, there's I think it comes from not only love, but responsibility, like from each according to their ability, to each according to their need. And I think we, you know, as senior leaders and the way that we were brought up through NBTEL, that feeling of responsibility. And just to say in this podcast, Kathy was named one of the top 25 most influential females in Atlantic Canada. That doesn't just happen. That comes because of what you do.
So Roxanne, thank you for that. But what are you really excited about these days? Is it the Women for 50%? I got to sit in on the podcast, on the webinar yesterday to hear some of the great insights from the survey. Tell me what you're particularly proud of at the moment.
I'm proud of everything that people do. I'll tell you what gives you what's underlying most of it is we do not need to live in poverty. Our children do not need to live in poverty. And there's so much, of our world and our province where children are being brought up in poverty, and there is absolutely no need for it. It is our shame. And, whether it's having more diversity around the table to make better decisions, or it's literacy, or it's the fight against poverty. Those are things comes maybe from where I came from. But education is the way out. And if we educate people and give them the tools to grow their own worth, and wonderfulness that they were born with, they'll find a way.
I love that response. And we're so appreciative that you find the time and the tenacity to keep on these important files. And Dave, to finish out, you've been pretty passionate about the startup community for 15 plus years. I've worked on proposals with you that have gone well and some that haven't gone so well with some of the ideas we've come up with across the years. But I mean, you're involved in Propel ICT. You've been a founding member and involved in Tech Impact. Just driving the tech sector is in your blood. And those are just a couple. And Innovatia as an organization is very involved in the community. Talk to me about what's really exciting you these days and how come you've been so passionate about this tech community for so long.
Well, I fundamentally believe that that our traditional sectors will thrive only if they really adopt technologies to make them continue to make them globally competitive and so forth. I mean, they've been hugely successful. It's just how do you make sure that we maintain that level of, and I believe the technology sector itself, if you don't have a healthy technology sector, it's just going to be problematic from an economic perspective in terms of where the future of our region goes to. And, I think startups is one way of doing that, cultivating existing technology firms is another, and educating the youth of tomorrow, the youth of today, the leaders of tomorrow to get excited about this stuff is really important. But the other thing that I've really kind of become more, even more passionate about lately I've been fortunate enough to sit on a board with Family Plus, and they provide services to the community here, whether it be around mental wellness, child youth advocacy type programs, There's a lot that we can be doing there, and I hope through Family Plus and maybe through some other ideas that I have in my head, and that we'll be able to make some big gains in that space in this area, because I think we need to there's a lot of great organizations out there doing great things, like really great things, grassroots stuff. And, you know, one of the things is how do you bring them together so that we can do them, you know, again, the common, the uncommon with the common. You know, put some social entrepreneurism to these challenges, and we can, I think we can make a huge difference. And I, you know, just like, you know, we can be an incubator in many things, or, you know, in terms of solutions, technology, businesses, and so forth, I'd love to see our region become a social incubator around coming up with ideas to advance social causes and really fundamentally change the way we deliver our programs. And, you know, between you and me and Roxanne and whoever listens to this this broadcast, maybe 10 people, I don't know. That is something that I'm putting a lot of thought to. And I, and someday if I actually ever have any money, I'll put my money to it. And so that's kind of what, that's kind of what's been I've been thinking a lot about lately. So economic development, social as well. And so, anyway, yeah.
Well, we'll make sure at the end of the, when we publish the show, we'll have links to some of these organizations so that people can learn more, because in order to act, people need to get awareness. They need to get educated and inspired. And you two are very inspirational leaders that our region needs. And I can't thank you enough for taking the time today to tell your stories and to inspire many others who are going to get to listen to the show and learn more about what you do. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Kathy.
I really enjoyed that conversation today. You know, I loved when Roxanne said that there was only one person that she wanted to go on this journey with, and that was Dave. And it's such an important lesson for all entrepreneurs. Co-founder relationships are key to success, and there's no doubt in my mind that the relationship that Roxanne and Dave have has been the key to their success. They are so aligned on principles, the importance of partnership, diversity and inclusion, and more. For those of us who were so fortunate to work at MBTEL, we know where these values were created. We know where they got this deep experience. They talked about it as the best MBA in the world. We know their mentors like the late Jack Travis, like Jerry Pond and Bob Neal, and where that focus was around innovating around customers. It was ingrained in all of us. I think it's worked out pretty well for them, and I'm so glad they shared that part of the story today. One last thing. While we started a conversation about diversity and inclusion and belonging in this episode, and I was so pleased that Roxanne and Dave shared their perspectives on it, I want you to know we're going to be diving much deeper into this subject at Tech Impact in 2021. I'm looking forward to listening and learning from our guests and all of you on this critically important subject. I can't thank Roxanne and Dave enough for some outstanding content and ideas. And I can't thank you enough for listening and being part of the Tech Talks community. We'll be back soon with a new episode, and bye for now.
Tech Talks is brought to you by Tech Impact. Learn more at techimpact.it. The podcast is hosted by Tech Impact CEO, Kathy Simpson. It's produced by me, Matt George. It's engineered by the great Zachary Peltier and is part of the Unsettled Media Podcast Network.